seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to Golf Weekly. So, exciting times. We are looking ahead to the Ryder Cup in the show today. Wild cards are in. We are looking back on the BMW won by Keegan Bradley. He pipped new world number one Justin Rose. And Rory had his same old putting woes. Some things never change, Nathan Murphy.
How are you? This time 2 weeks, Joe. Oh. We'll be feet up in the Grand Palais at Versailles. Nice glass of wine.
Yeah.
Living the life.
You meant to say near Palais Versailles there, no?
No, I think we'll just
go in. Trespass.
No, you can bring in a... Did you not do the tour of Versailles when we were there for the Euros?
I had done it on a previous occasion.
Had you?
I didn't.
I did the full thing.
Very good.
It is.
Yeah. It is
even
genuinely
the walk
good.
Along the grounds.
Mm.
You don't even have to pay to get into that. You can just wander down.
Well, can you just go around?
Mm.
That's a good touch. It's a beautiful town, Versailles.
The team are staying where the Irish team stayed for Euro 2016, which I think is where the Treaty of Versailles was signed.
Is that right?
Or maybe where they all stayed. It's a very fancy hotel.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lovely town, Versailles.
Yeah, very nice. Very
so that's where we're staying, and that's where the team's staying. Slightly different surroundings.
Are we on the same floor as the team? Or where have you booked for us?
Do you remember the campsite that was quite close by?
Not really. We're not in a campsite.
No, we're not. We're not. We have an actual...
Do we have an apartment?
We do. An Airbnb. It's paid for, so I presume they can't cancel. For some reason, I don't trust Airbnb still.
Mm.
I don't know why, considering millions of people use it without a problem.
Yeah.
And they've taken the money. And they've arranged a time to meet us.
I feel you've less recourse if they suddenly ring and say, do you know what? If I have family illness, I've got to go.
Do you know what? I've never heard of golf in my life before, but somebody just pointed out that there's this really big tournament taking place, yeah. And I'm an idiot. I've doubled the price.
Have we been ripped off Ryder Cup 06 style?
Well, a little bit, but...
Not Ryder Cup 06 style.
Like, we are still staying in Versailles. It's... I think Versailles is about 10 miles, not even,
from the course. Yeah.
So it's pretty much the closest major town.
I mean, really, we should try and gate crash the celebrations on Sunday evening.
Oh, absolutely.
Hotel, you know?
It'll probably be difficult, but I don't know. Maybe Harrington might bring us in.
Yeah. No, it's okay. They're journalists.
Yeah. It's fine. We leave our phones outside. We won't Instagram story the entire thing.
No, it's exciting times. I'm off on annual leave in the next few minutes, quite literally, Nathan, as soon as this golf podcast is
wonderful.
Done. Yeah. And,
you going to play any golf on annual leave?
No. Next, it's a friend's wedding and then me and the better half, Nathan. We're going
to
stay on for another 6, 7, 8, 9 days.
Brilliant.
Because why
are
not?
You coming straight back for the Ryder Cup?
Bro, I mean, yes, but no. I mean, we're just coming back because we're going to stay away forever.
No, but that's the best type of holiday.
Uh-huh.
Is, like, you're not really coming back to work. You're going straight to the Ryder Cup.
No, it's true. It's true. So I'll be
fine
out Wednesday.
2 weeks with your better half. And then share a one-bedroom apartment with me for 4 days.
Not one bedroom. Is it one bedroom?
It might be. So you're I can't remember.
Yeah, Jesus.
I'm there first.
You're going to get there first, so that's me on a couch, is it?
So, again, Airbnb, they say two beds, but then you get there and they mean one bed, one couch that can be used as a bed.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I don't know.
I'm back to Wednesday, or I'm back to Tuesday, and then I've got a thing on Wednesday morning, and then I will follow on Wednesday.
I'm excited.
Are you?
I'm looking forward to it. It's just... It's a really good event to cover.
Yeah. I think when I was weighing up whether to go or not, because we went in 2014, the two things which swayed me, because there are plenty of cons. There are lots of pros for sure, but...
It's a great... It's like, people who are sitting at home listening.
Yeah, I know.
You're in a good
position. I know. Yeah, that's
for the
thing.
Weekend.
That's
Sky's coverage is unbelievably good.
I was sorely tempted to just say, do you know what? I'll let Nathan go and do his thing on his own. And... I've got Fridays off. I've got Saturdays off. I won't miss a shot. I'll get to watch it all. And then on Sundays, you know, you'll be there and we'll kind of chit-chat. And then we've got the match. So I'll really get to see the whole Ryder Cup. So I was tempted in a way. The two things which swayed me were, one, Tiger Woods. Just seeing him on the range. Mm. Whatever. But it's very difficult actually to follow them around because you're talking about four matches at any given time for most of it and 20,000, 18,000 people on the course. So, I mean, they're just swallowed up by the number of people. And secondly, memories of the first tee on Friday morning 2014. Actually, it was genuinely cool.
Bubba Watson and Webb Simpson and everyone... Was it Justin Rose sniggered when Webb Simpson hit his tee shot?
Did he?
And Bubba had a little, don't you laugh at him.
Oh, yeah. Because Webb, the pressure got to Webb.
Yeah, absolutely.
He skied it. Or did he duff it?
Oh, it couldn't have gone 200 yards.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an extraordinary thing to see. Because they weren't first out, so you were becoming very acclimatized to how far the ball should be going. And then it just went straight up in the air.
Yeah, it was. That's why I'm excited, actually, is the Tiger factor. Because the only times I've covered events that Tiger's played at, like, it's not been the real Tiger.
Yeah.
It was Tiger in some sort of injury mode or some sort of decline.
Yeah.
I'm just excited about the possibility that Jim Furyk may, on the Friday morning four balls, and I would love this.
Please say what you're going to, I think you're going to say.
Tiger and Phil. Ah, yes. Can you imagine? Like, I want Jim Furyk to go balls out.
Yeah.
And listen, I'm not being parochial about this because the Ryder Cup, it's a bit like the Lions Tour. Like, we're not going to be walking around in Versailles moping on Monday morning if Europe lose.
It'll be a big blow for us, Nathan.
You just want it to be dramatic.
I'm European before I'm Irish.
You want a Miracle in Medina type scenario.
Yeah, something
this
like
is what comic. You want from a Ryder Cup. Yeah. That at 4 o'clock on Sunday evening, it's still there for either team.
Yeah.
I don't want America to go and win this by 8 points like last time either.
Mm.
I want it to be pretty close. But I just think the options for Furyk.
Mm.
Again, I know people are speculating he'll play Tiger and DeChambeau.
Yeah.
And maybe that's more of a foursomes pairing. But for a four ball, like, you're not going to play Phil in foursomes.
Oh, you will, because he'll throw a strop.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You shouldn't play Phil in foursomes.
I think that's the question, though, isn't it, for the Tuesday or Wednesday press conference? Yeah. Phil, last time you were on European soil for a Ryder Cup press conference, you hung one of the greatest, most respected figures in the game out to dry. Jim, are you concerned that something similar may happen to you on Sunday?
Jim was there.
I know. Yeah. He was one of those with his head bowed going, please, please don't ask me anything about this. But imagine if he plays Tiger and Phil, first pairing, and they've this unbelievable grandstand around the first tee.
Ah, stop.
There's going to be about 17,000 people around the first tee alone.
There's a
up against Rory and Ram.
What's coming to mind right now for me is there's a South Park gif that always goes around of one of the dads watching on his computer. And that's how I'm feeling.
McIntyre.
Yeah. Poor McIntyre. So, it will be unbelievable. And you see, unlike Hal Sutton, where it was, even without the benefit of hindsight, it was just crazy. Pretty much crazy to put Phil and Tiger together because they just didn't like each other at that stage. Now they really do.
Oh, and Phil has become such a caricature of himself. You could imagine, I can just see Phil doing something stupid. Like, they win 5-4 and he does some sort of a dance.
Oh, please.
He replicates the dance on the green.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He even sort of looks like a caricature of something. He's got the aging process and everything. He's just, everything's a bit bigger and more caricature-y.
It's like, it's the whole thing is just going to be fascinating. Like, how does Bjorn use Rory? Because I heard Dermot Galise, people should listen back to Galise on, he was on Sunday's show, I presume it's up online, talking about the Ryder Cup. It should be up online.
Presume
not,
nothing.
Text us and we'll get it put up online. But he was talking about Rory and Reed at the last Ryder Cup and how, what brilliant theatre it was, but how Rory got into his own that was unnatural.
Yeah.
He'd never been there before. In fact, you spend your entire life as a golfer trying not to get as worked up as he did, and he ended up losing.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder with Thomas Bjorn how he approaches that. Like, do you say to Rory, do you show him that video on the Thursday night and go, that's the Rory I want to see?
Mm.
Or do you kind of go, actually, like, imagine if Rory ends up playing Tiger and Phil. I just feel there's so much pressure on Rory to respond.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I really hope Furyk does the right thing by everyone here and puts them together.
First out.
Yeah.
And then you, like, imagine them first out, followed up with Dustin Johnson and Koepka, then Justin Thomas, and then Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth, and then Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler.
Jesus.
There's your opening morning four balls right there.
That's,
like, that's
beautiful.
Balls out.
That is beautiful. That is amazing.
Like,
I wasn't excited
by this.
That
is the greatest four-ball lineup of all time.
God, that's an amazing prospect. I mean, honestly, I wasn't that excited about the thing until you've got
me
going.
Do you want Matt Wallace or Rafa Cabrera-Bale going out against those guys?
No, I think that's why you go for Sergio.
I want Sergio.
Yeah.
Every day of the week.
He at least will hit 80% of his performance level, whereas Matt Wallace could completely tank.
Oh.
And who was our poor friend in Gleneagles? The one Scottish guy, Gallagher.
Stephen Gallagher, yeah.
Playing with Poulter, who wasn't in good form, and they just, I mean, that was the end of Gallagher.
Stunk the joint out.
Killed him, yeah. That can happen to Matt Wallace. Very easily. God, I'm excited. That's an unbelievable four balls line. Is it four ball first?
I'm 99% sure it's four balls first.
Jeez, then he has to do it.
I think it was four sums first the last time in America, but McGinley certainly went with four balls first, and I'm fairly sure it's four balls first.
God. I mean, it would be a tragedy if he doesn't do Phil and Tiger. It just will. Because this is it. Like, this is it's a goodbye for one of them. Certainly Phil. Mm. And then who knows where Tiger will be in 2 years. Oh, maybe 2 years, Phil. Hard to know. He's definitely hanging on a
Phil
bit.
Phil get captaincy in 2 years?
Maybe. Phil versus Harrington. Stop.
No, listen to this. Phil gets the captaincy in 2 years. Phil picks himself. Absolutely. Absolutely picks himself.
Oh, jeez.
Phil against Harrington would be... Oh, that'd be brilliant.
Yeah, no.
Because they'd both... Like, you could imagine if it was Phil Harrington in 2 years, they'd meet each other a year in advance and say, let's have some fun with this.
Mm.
Let's build this up. Let's make a lot of money. Let's make a lot of money on this.
Yeah.
But let's do the talk show circuit.
I think you're
right. Let's do a little bit of trash talking.
They'd both love it. They love it. They might even have a Phil Tiger match.
Oh my God.
The captains face off a year before.
Oh.
Jesus.
Loser loses a pick.
I think we should be in golf marketing. Honestly. Everything we've just said there, mainly you, is phenomenal. God. I'm excited now. I mean, there is the grimness of the travel and the buses.
Oh, there's without question, at 5:15 that morning, I'll be thinking,
why am I doing this?
It won't be that great.
Yeah. No, honestly, I know it's a horrific thing to say, covering an event like this, but when you're actually working, the logistics are a pain.
There's no amount of bitching and moaning that we won't do.
No, seriously. Like, I'll be a bit miserable some of the time, but...
Oh, well, I'm used to it by now. 4 years ago, it was difficult because we'd only started working together. I found it a bit awkward. I was like, wow.
I was absolutely fine. I just went into myself a few times.
So a bit of space sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Declan Ryan at Golf Weekly OTB. Well, lads, this is what I call my laugh of the week tweet. Well, lads, I do love Golf Weekly and I hear you lads talk about other golf podcasts. Could you recommend another golf podcast to listen to during the leaner weeks and months of Golf Weekly? Thanks, # friend of the pod.
Firstly,
I actually laughed out loud.
I saw that and I was like, who does this guy think he is? # friend of the pod.
Ain't no friend of mine.
What leaner weeks?
Yeah, I know.
There have been no leaner weeks. We have this reputation for being inconsistent.
Self-imposed. We're like the Johnny Pilkington of Offaly. We talk about how we hardly ever do a podcast. And actually, I don't think we missed one.
Months.
And someone got into a right kerfuffle with us recently on Twitter. And I had to put him right.
You're taking no shit.
I just thought it was...
No, you're dead right.
Factually incorrect. We are now Golf Weekly. And living up to the name.
You're on holidays next week, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
You'll have Peter Lawrie in here.
Peter Lawrie. And we will question him on his Lee Westwood conversation.
And do me a favour on Lawrie, because we got a great response to our Christie Senior podcast. Peter Lawrie, when we were playing with him a couple of weeks back in Carlow, just mentioned offhand, oh yeah, I got lessons from Christie. So you should ask him about the lessons he got from Christie. Tough taskmaster.
We'll ask him as well, and I don't have his name in front of me. Mm-hmm. Shane Lawrie has a new caddy. He's moved on from his brother.
Oh, I missed that.
And it is one of Peter Lawrie's former caddies.
Ah, well then, look. So there will be a golf talk about next week, and Fiona might be not.
I can't believe you went. I didn't. I took a few weeks off, Joe, and I couldn't help but notice that suddenly Dave McIntyre was in my seat, live in McGurk's.
Oh yeah.
I couldn't help but notice that. Yeah. It's fine. Like
that was another easy way.
You suddenly sold the show.
No. That was another easy way for McIntyre to class as a full day worked.
Ah, brilliant.
Yeah, that's one of my 2 days done.
Wow.
So,
got it, sus.
Matt Davis, when can we expect the next pod where Peter Lawrie will take a victory lap after Spieth missed the Tour Championship? I mean, in fairness.
Oh, Jordan.
Come on, Jordan.
The conversation we had at the Irish Open with Dylan Fratelli just totally reaffirmed everything I believe about Jordan Spieth, which is that I'm never, ever going to write him off.
Same.
I fully believe he's going to come in back and win the Masters next year and may win all four.
Yeah. I wouldn't disagree with anything you say about Jordan Spieth. Dylan Fratelli, one of the many Golf Weekly episodes this year. I'd forgotten about Dylan Fratelli. That's how many we've done.
Do you think, with our Ryder Cup caps on, that because Jordan Spieth has had a down year...
I've literally got my cap. Why aren't you wearing your cap literally?
I'm just wondering. Remember at the last Ryder Cup we went and we searched the merchandise tent and we did find a cap that cost about...
I think it was £200.
Oh my God. Yeah, nobody's getting a present back from the Ryder Cup. But I'm wondering, because Tiger's there, that maybe there's more opportunity to get some access to, say, somebody like Jordan Spieth.
Mm.
Because everybody will want Tiger
yeah.
after every round. And poor Jordan will be sitting over in the corner with nobody chatting to him.
Look, if we,
we may get a chance to fanboy.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I mean, we may do. I still have that picture. It's basically just like a flat cap with like some Scottish tweed.
Mm.
I mean, it was like 200 quid. Mm. And even just like the tent, the merchandise tent of these things, I thought it was particularly disgraceful. The Ryder Cup, more so than any Open, any Irish Open, any European Tour event. I thought it was...
Were we in a premium section?
No.
At Celtic, I still have my waterproof jacket is a Ryder Cup 2010 Celtic Manor that I had to buy because the weather was so bad.
Yeah.
And I got one of the final ones and it cost me like £250. But it still works perfectly.
No, I'm sure it's good quality, but I actually thought it was so bad it was lacking in taste. Like it was... It is just bad. Because just a standard woolly hat that you'd wear... You know, you buy them all the time. You buy in every golf shop in the country with the club crest on
for 15 quid,
something like that. The one here was £80. I just thought it just can't be £80, and I felt it. It genuinely is no different to anything. It's just,
you tried it on. I remember when we took a hilarious photograph.
Yeah, I'm looking for
that's the type of stuff we're going to be supplying.
Yeah, now we've got Snapchat and Instagram.
Oh wow.
Way too childish for that.
At the time, we could only share it amongst ourselves.
Yeah, I'm too busy. I mean, I don't know what showing you is going to achieve, actually. I don't know why I'm flicking through my phone.
No, I'm literally the only other person who's ever seen it.
There. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
So, no, I didn't. I thought it was crazy money. And the other thing, actually, the great issue with buying stuff at a Ryder Cup is it dates so terribly. Like, let's be honest, we all have items of clothing or hats that we think to ourselves, God, I can't believe I'm still wearing this. But it doesn't have a date stamped on it.
The only one that seems acceptable is... a Masters top.
Yeah, I'm with you there. But like a Ryder Cup thing, it's about 20 years before it becomes a vintage item. And you're just the scruffy git wearing something from the, you know, K Club 06.
Yeah,
you know
those
what I mean?
Guys. Do you know who else was at the K Club in 06? Everybody.
Yeah. Oh my God, were you there? Wow. So anyway, sorry, I gotta get moving here. Justin Rose says Mark Mullooly is now the number one golfer in the world. Which is, he says, in a word, ludicrous. Can you explain how the world rankings are calculated, as I've never understood it? # friend of the pod.
Ah, well, funny you ask.
No, we can't. They're strange. They're a strange beast in every sport, to be fair. They're a difficult thing to do, world rankings. Football's a mess. No, it's difficult. It's tricky.
But they reward consistency.
Yeah, that's Justin. We'll talk later on, actually. There's some interesting stats around world number ones versus major winners and ask, is it actually... a better and also very much underrated achievement to get to world number one as opposed to winning a major. John Quinn on the Christie Senior podcast. Brilliant podcast, lads. Enjoyed it. We had Colm Ryan with his other half, looked like his other half, or his sister, one or the other, at Pebble Beach together. You don't make presumptions. Is it offensive? They don't look like each other.
Is it Colin or Colm?
Colm.
Colm will be at home with his fiance, probably on their honeymoon, and going, we got a shout out on Golf Weekly. They were wondering, were you my sister? Such is the...
Well, whether she was his sister or his other half, she looked very happy to be there
okay,
with him.
Okay, great.
They're having a great time together. Could have been a family holiday.
Sure. That's fine.
So he said they were enjoying Pebble Beach. They're at Pebble Beach together.
Yeah. Only time I was at Pebble Beach was on my honeymoon, Joe.
Why did you go there for your honeymoon?
We travelled the east coast of America and it's en route.
It's on the west coast.
Sorry, west coast of America. We went from San Francisco to LA and Pebble Beaches. It's a lovely... Monterey. Carmel.
No, I know.
It's a lovely part of the world.
Jim Nance lives there, basically.
On Pebble. Pebble.
Yeah.
Yeah. They call it, what is it? Home of the newlyweds and the nearly deads.
That's very good. Anurag Upal. Definitely the picture of the week we got. He said, I've only ever been to Ireland once. It was in 2012, and I was so fortunate to meet himself at Royal Dublin. Listening to the pod this week, such a great peek into the great man's life. Great picture of the two of them, Christie Senior.
Brilliant.
Yeah, arms around each other in the pro shop at Royal Dublin. Alan McGrain also enjoyed it. As ratings for the pod go for the pod, lads, can't go any higher. He says, as a new golfer playing as long as Joe. Playing since about 2009.
Oof.
10. He says, I barely knew anything significant about the legend that was Christy O'Connor Sr. After this pod, I feel like I knew him all my life. Excellent. Class interview, Noglin. Christy Sr. complimented my swing in Royal Dublin when leaning out of a car window around 1999. He has in brackets, though, after complimenting my swing. At least I think that's what he said. Joe Kearns enjoyed it. Thanks very much. Yeah, lots of great feedback from everybody. So that was much appreciated. We thank you. Stuart Armstrong said, I'm halfway through and coming from a perspective of knowing absolutely nothing about Irish golf history. I'm loving it. The clips at the start were wonderful. There was some great Pathé News stuff referring to the boys from ERA. And they called Christy Christian.
Wow.
Yeah. See, we all think that it was great back in the day, media-wise, but actually, without the internet, the number of bloody mistakes which were made were off the charts. It was a car crash. It's a mess. Lads, your Christy senior pod this week, brilliant. 75 minutes just flew by, says Robert. And then Emmett Kane. Ah, yes. Okay. In the interest of full disclosure with all the listeners, we've already spoken to Fionn. So we're going to play that out next in just a moment. Fionn's checked in earlier. And so this comes up. I didn't realise it was bloody Emmett Kane.
Kane.
Sod him now. He's keen after this. Stopped halfway through the Golf Weekly podcast. Emmett Kane is a bit of spunk on Twitter, I would
oh,
say.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Emmett's an angry man.
Do you know him? Have you met him?
Emmett lives, like, down my road.
Would he be nice in person?
Well, you see, it's one of these Twitter... Emmett, I'm going to hang him out dry. It would be several years older than me. So, you know, we're both from the same place.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't meet Emmett. I wouldn't have known Emmett that well. But now I would interact with him quite a bit online. So when I would see him around Ballyhona. So we'd have something in common.
Yes. His worship of you.
But I would never have known that he had such spunk in him.
Yeah.
Until the online world brought us together.
It's an interesting thing because there was another, I won't mention my name, but there was a fella that we met at Ballyliffin who was just a gent. Jeez, he's spiky enough on Twitter as well. You know, everyone can see this.
Mm.
Anyway, look what Emmett Keane, gentleman that he is, said. Halfway through, Christy O'Connor Senior Special. I just want to say, at Dermot Galise, a national treasure. The man is an infinite well of golf history and anecdotes. He should be in every pod. You can drop Fionn Davenport if you're tight for time.
Wow.
Did he include Fionn Davenport? Did he at him? Did he pop up in Fionn Davenport's afternoon, where Fionn may have been having a bad day somewhere? Something going on. Oh, notification.
Oof.
I'm just trying to go about my world and my life as well as possible. And then he says, you can drop Fionn Davenport.
Did he say at Fionn Davenport?
Yes.
Oh, Emmett.
This comes up. Don't worry, Emmett. He saw your tweet.
Emmett's wife used to teach me home economics.
Right. What did you get into leaving?
I didn't do home economics for leaving. I was the only boy in my home economics class. You had a choice of woodwork or home economics.
Yeah.
And I turned my back on woodwork and went with home economics. Like, woodwork. Have you seen me? I was never going to be a carpenter. It just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
Also, it meant I was in a class full of 29 girls.
That's a fair
which, when
point.
You're 13,
yeah,
is like when you get past the initial day of slagging.
Yeah,
I was like, I've made the best decision going here.
I'd say your mates quickly realised.
Oh,
hang on.
So it's like, wait a second. There's 60 lads split into two in this class, and your man is over there spending 8 hours a week with every girl in the place. I'm like, thank you. It was genius.
Oh dear. I'm tempted to ask questions, but I'm just going to leave it at that. I think. No one needs to hear.
Yeah.
Emmett Kane, we of course...
Sorry, I passed... I don't know what I got in my junior cert in home economics, but you had to do knitting was part of it, which obviously I simply couldn't do. So Emmett's wife, God bless her, she knitted my...
What do you mean you simply couldn't do?
I just couldn't knit. It's just impossible.
It's not... Well,
like, if I spent some time practicing,
well, there,
I'm sure
that's
I could
point.
Have.
Yeah, that's
but I
point.
Just...
Right, we're getting giddy. So... Emmett Keane, we're obviously only messing. You can tweet away, abuse us all. You're one of the.
He doesn't need a second invitation.
No, I know. Sorry, as if he was about to stop. No, we jest, and Fionn didn't actually care that much. So they are your tweets. Here's how we got on talking about the week's golf with Fionn. And so it's time to welcome in Fionn Davenport. Hello.
Gentlemen.
How are you? We've just done the tweets and all that kind of business. There was a nice response to the Christy O'Connor piece that we put out last week. You were obviously there.
Although, curiously, mm-hmm. you liked the tweet that, that Dermot Galise was amazing. And if you want to cut somebody, cut Fionn Davenport. And I saw Joe Malloy liked.
Oh, did it say cut Fionn Davenport in it?
Yeah, it did, yeah.
I thought what you were going to say was, oh, do you see what other people like?
Yeah, it was. I thought I was wow. like, wow.
Oh, sorry, that was a mistake. Outrageous tweet.
Wow.
Sorry, I saw that Dermot Gleeson being a national treasure part. And
he is a national treasure, there's no doubt.
And probably just liked it. That I may not have read the tweet as thoroughly as I should have.
I just, what I would confuses never me in my naivete is there not room for all of us?
But there is.
Clearly,
there is.
Clearly not, it
we're
seems.
No, we're an ever-expanding product.
We are indeed. Yeah, we are indeed.
Busy lives. Mm.
Christy O'Connor, anything you want to briefly add, Fionn? We've just touched on it here.
It was a really good one, actually, because, I mean, obviously we recorded a few weeks ago. It was a really good day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think it might be the second last time I've played golf.
Wow. That's June 1st.
Because I played then, yeah, at the time of the Irish Open, and I haven't picked up the old golf bats since. Yeah.
Well, there have been major life events happening, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
There indeed, there have. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Nathan.
Well, do we want to tell the listeners what's been going on in your lives?
I'm just wondering, Fionn, because people will be wondering what happened to your girlfriend.
Well, she's now my wife.
Well, oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What?
I got married.
Wow. Great wedding, Fionn. Thanks for the invite.
We had a great day.
We not snuck away. We disappeared off to Thailand.
Kidnapped.
And I kidnapped her. And we went to Thailand and got married on a beach, just the two of us. And
it looked beautiful.
It did look nice.
It was gorgeous. Yeah. I highly recommend it. And it's not obviously when you want your friends and family around, that's also a very nice thing. But like, there's an element of being a project manager about like a bigger wedding that was certainly absent here. Mm. And it was gorgeous. And the weather was just. Yeah, setting was lovely. Yeah.
Well, hearty congratulations, Fionn.
Thank you very much. Nathan, you've had a life-changing event as well.
I have. I too have had a major change in my circumstances. I had a child, Joe.
Oh!
A third child.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
A girl.
Oh.
Shit just
congratulations.
Got real. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So I played golf about a month ago, and I look forward to... picking up my club in about 6 years' time.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, for her seventh birthday, you might get a four ball. Yeah.
My life is still as hollow and superficial as ever, I want to tell everyone.
Yeah, maybe pick things up a little bit.
No, happy where I am.
No pressure.
So, congratulations to you both. That's great.
You don't seem convincing there, Joe.
Yeah? You didn't seem convincing about the birth of your daughter.
I'm delighted. I've spoken about it a lot for the last 4 weeks, and I'm pretty tired.
I was just going to say, he's suffering the after effects of a bit of sleeplessness, maybe.
They say three is no different to two.
Really,
that's
Joe, do they?
Two.
Is there a big difference between one and two?
Well, you see, there was only 15 months between our two.
You'd Irish
so
twins.
So we basically... two babies at the same time. So it's more shock to the system because my middle child now is five.
Oh.
I was out of everything.
You're back into it.
I'm right back into it. And listen, it's a wonderful thing. We are blessed to have this child in our house. But she was born a week before my middle child started school. And I'd been waiting for this moment for 5 years that he would leave my house for 6 hours a day.
Yeah.
Which is a nice period of time.
Yeah.
Where you can do other things. That's not happening.
No, you're right back to square one there. Mm. Dear, oh dear.
So this time 5 years, she'll be starting school and that'll be a joyous occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, in another conversation, Debbie is going to her friends. Nathan is, seriously, he's over the moon.
Yeah,
absolutely
I know.
Thrilled.
I am. Mm.
This is the thing. Just be honest about your feelings. You're allowed to love your daughter. What's wrong with you?
I am. I do love my daughter. She's wonderful.
You're a monster.
I'm saying
Nathan.
On this golf podcast, in reference to my golfing career, Joe. In reference to my golfing career.
Yeah. Well, golf will survive. Oh, that's a bit harsh.
Terrible, isn't it?
Well. I think so. So let's touch on the Ryder Cup situation and the week that was. Maybe week that was first, very briefly, the BMW, Keegan Bradley versus Justin Rose. Keegan Bradley, a first win on tour in 6 years for the former US PGA champion. Now, obviously, without his long putter. And he beat Justin Rose, who went to world number one, Justin Rose. So this was a pretty exciting tournament. Unfortunately, the rain maybe interrupted it somewhat, but it was good and the field was good. And when you have Rory and Tiger shooting a 62 in both early doors, it shoots a bit of excitement into it.
Yeah, you say that it was a sad thing that the rain forced it to Monday. For me, it was a very good thing because suddenly it was finishing at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. It's perfect Monday afternoon entertainment. There's a whole lot to talk about from this tournament. Mm-hmm. Like, we should give Keegan Bradley his dues. He's had a pretty tough time of it. He was the boy wonder. He was Phil's kid. He was playing Ryder Cup. He was there on the Tuesday afternoons playing those big money games.
Yeah.
And then they changed the rules on the putter.
Yeah.
And it all went to pot.
Do you ever think Keegan Bradley and Adam Scott sometimes, and maybe Webb Simpson, were in the locker room over the last couple of years and just exchanged a look which said, yeah.
Yeah, and you would understand why they would feel like that. But there have been rule changes before. You think of Harrington and the Grooves.
Mm.
Like, Harrington is the most vocal on that. And that, like, more than anything, people love to focus on, oh, Harrington, the pernickety scientist who can't just leave things alone. What changed more than anything was the Grooves around the greens.
Yeah.
And he talks about it. There's probably 10 more players who were massively affected by it as well. Mm. You just have to suck it up. And they've all had a bit of a rejuvenation this year, all three of them.
Yeah.
Webb Simpson in particular has been exceptional. Bradley's driving, though, all year. He's number one driver on tour. So all he needs is a semi-decent week.
Mm.
So there was a bit of talk for sort of the final three or four holes when it looked as though he was going to win as to whether there might be a question for Jim Furyk that maybe he could force his way in because he had played Ryder Cup. He'd done quite well. He, you know, wears the red, white and blue quite well, but they stuck with
Tony Finau, yeah. Did you catch much of it, Fionn?
Well, I did. I watched it. And then obviously the Sunday because of the rain delay. And then on Monday I was working. So I missed all of the Monday finish. But I watched Rory and Tiger shoot it out for the 62s, both playing exceptional stuff. I saw Brandel Chamblee tweeting that Rory was number one in every category bar putting. Every single one.
Yeah.
Like tee to green, strokes gained, whatever, around the greens, et cetera, et cetera. And, but like then on the Monday, just catching up with some of the highlights, I saw that Rory missed a whole bunch of, well, I won't say super short ones, but like, you know, those kind of mid-distance birdie putts that you make to really just put the tournament away, and he missed them all.
Yeah, it's hard not to feel like it's Groundhog Day when you talk about him, but it is worth looking at what he did on the Sunday. So, I mean, he shoots a 62 on Thursday, and that puts him in such a great position, and he's such a good front runner, you would think, God, come on now, Rory. And he often finds good form around this time of year. You remember 2 years ago where he won the Tour Championship. So he shot a 68 on the Sunday. That left him two shots outside the Bradley Rose playoff. And statistically, he hit 17 greens in regulation. He had a birdie putt on every single hole, and he made just two of them. And eight of 13 putts were inside 15 feet.
That's what I mean. That kind of middle distance where you, like, if you're playing, if you've got a hot flat stick, you think, out of those, if I made three of them,
Well, that would have won him the tournament.
That would have won him the tournament, and
he had 32 putts in the end. So, maybe
which is rubbish.
Maybe three putts short of being some way acceptable. Maybe four under the circumstances. The greens weren't overly tricky. Lots of players making putts. It was soft.
What,
it was slow.
Tiger came in with a 64 on the last round? Mm. Am I wrong?
Yeah, they finished first and second strokes gained tee to green this week. So both of them on the days that they putted well scored brilliantly. But they just couldn't get any sort of consistency. And it is Groundhog Day for Rory. The look in his face on 18 when he missed yet another one was Groundhog Day. As he's looking to the skies thinking, when is it going to end? And the concern for Rory has to be, is it ever going to end?
Mm.
Consistently. He may get the odd Bay Hill, Arnold Palmer week where things just click. But there's been no sign of it since. And the worry is everything else is so good right now. Is that going to last forever? So
that's
by the time
point.
We get to Augusta next March, maybe he does get a bit of an improvement in his putting, but he needs everything else to stay just where it is.
Mm.
So it's hugely, hugely frustrating.
I often think in these scenarios when he's playing so well, it must make practice very difficult, as in, what is the point? You know, I'm driving the ball exceptionally well, I'm playing exceptionally well, I'm hitting every green in regulation, and I still can't get it done given what's going on the green. So just the motivation to go out on a Tuesday morning to practice your irons again. It must cross your point. Mm. Like, this is not the issue. Now, I know, look, go practice your putting, but you have to keep practicing your irons and your driver to maintain that part of your game.
I'm sure Rory feels somewhat hard done by the amount of criticism he has to take. But listen, he's, after Tiger, the most recognisable golfer in the world.
He's well compensated for the attention.
Yeah.
I was going to say exactly the same thing.
I still think he does get a little bit of a free pass with a lot of the criticism in that this is the biggest issue facing his entire career. Mm-hmm. And everything, even Brandel Chamblee's analysis, is all on he's first. That's irrelevant.
Yeah.
We don't seem to look at it the other way around, the guys who are brilliant putters, and go back and do a deep dive into just how poor they were off the tee. And if they just fix that, they'd be incredible. Like, it's not that simple. Like, this is the biggest problem in Rory's career, and it's holding him back.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem to be abating at all. I mean, that's just another notch in the belt. Interesting then, so Justin Rose goes to world number one. Philip Reid had a great piece about this in the Irish Times. So Justin Rose, since they brought in world rankings, Bernhard Langer, interestingly, was the first world number one. He is just the 22nd player to become world number one. And so there were some really good numbers out of this. It's a big thing to do. Like, Reid was asking the question, is it a bigger achievement to win a major or to get to world number one? And if you were just to look at it in statistical terms, it's a bigger achievement to get to world number one. So since Langer got to world number one, there have been 22 world number ones. Since Langer was world number one, there have been 82 different players who have won a major. Like, there's a really strong argument that Lee Westwood and Luke Donald, who have never won majors, that what they achieved was a far bigger achievement than, for instance,
Martin Keimer.
Martin, well, he's won two now. Mm. Darren Clark, you know, how many did Webb Simpson didn't win a second, did he? He just did. Oh, no, he won a player. Sorry. So getting to world number one, Fionn, ahead of a Darren Clark or a Webb Simpson, we don't appreciate getting to world number one more than that, but I wonder, should we?
Well, there's a statistical anomaly in that Tiger Woods was number one for 680-odd weeks of all of that time. So you need to take out literally 6 years or 7 years out of that.
Well, I still think there would have been way more major winners than world number ones, even if we do that.
Are you really comparing like, though?
22 world number ones versus 82.
Okay, so it might be... Okay, so then maybe that's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take away from which is the more valuable accomplishment. And there is no doubt winning the major is. No doubt. In terms of value... I mean, there's no doubt that... I mean, Justin Rose has a major, so he'll always have that. And at the end of his career, he can turn around and say, oh, you know, I got to world number one. But that'll be judged in a broader arc of accomplishment that also includes a major. Whereas Donald reaches the end and goes, yeah, I was world number one, people go, who cares?
But sorry, okay, but I mean, look, there's no doubt we appreciate the majors more, but it just seems odd that Rich Beam, major winner, trumps Lee Westwood, world number one.
I don't know if you would quite go... that far. Like, there are...
No.
And what Rich Beam did was incredible on that week. And what Keegan Bradley, when he won a major, did was brilliant for that week. Like, Luke Donald had a stellar career. I would almost flip it and go, well, what were they missing that they could be the best player in the world, both Donald and Westwood, yet when it came to the biggest tournament, couldn't get it done? Mm. So they clearly had a consistent level of brilliance. But when it came to that final moment, and I don't remember Donald having too many near misses.
No.
Westwood had countless near misses.
Yeah.
As to what was missing in their character, in their golfing ability, that they couldn't get that job done. And maybe it reinforces that it's bloody hard to win a major.
An intangible almost about winning a major. Yeah. The weight of history and the pressure.
And I think also as well is there's a sense of like, and what I mean to, and I'm not picking on Luke Donald, but like as someone who got to world number one, and never really came within NASA's roar of winning a major. But he'll be judged less on being world number one, but his accomplishment will have been, say, for example, the fact that he's got, what has he got, 5 PGA Tours, 7 European Tour wins. Mm. Those are the things. So also, he's got whatever it is, like 14 wins in his career. And that says consistency. That says, you know, that he wasn't just flashing the pan. And I realize that people listening will go, well, that's how you get to world number one. You can't get to world number one unless you've established some form of consistency. But I still would argue is that as a pure valuable accomplishment, Rich Beam winning a major is in a whatever, for whatever reason, is just, I don't know, better.
There was a great stat as well. The players who've got to number two and haven't quite got over the summit, you know, so...
Oh, yeah.
Well, Jim Furyk spent 39 weeks at world number two. Jose Maria Lathabal, 35 weeks at world number two. Henrik Stenson, 24 weeks at world number two. Monty spent 24 weeks at world number two. Sergio Garcia spent 18 weeks at world number two. Phil Mickelson spent 270 weeks at world number two.
Wow.
That's an amazing accomplishment in its own right.
And none of us knew about it until now.
No. Although we certainly know, well, Justin Rose made sure that we all knew that he got to world number one. Did you see his tweet?
Go on.
It's something Cynical obviously fion. That he's, well, yeah, okay. Well, he's wanted it. I don't take it. And he deserves it because he's a terrific golfer. But so he tweeted, and I'm paraphrasing here, so I certainly don't want to do him an injustice, but we made it to number one dad and him with a picture of him with a finger up, looking up at the sky.
The Marion picture, I presume.
I would. Well, is it?
At Marion, he pointed up the sky after he won the major.
Oh, yeah, for his dad.
Yeah.
And we made it to number one. And, you know, it was a very heartfelt thing. And, you know, clearly this is a reflection of a relationship that he had with his father and that they both had this ambition for him to be considered the best golfer in the world. And then kind of somewhat undid the emotional context by tagging all of his sponsors into the tweet, you know, so thanks to whatever, Omega or whoever it is. And oddly enough, you know, he gets to world number one and near a mention of his caddy. I don't really see that whatever watch brand that sponsors him really was kind of super instrumental in him.
No, they were there from Fionn. They were there from
I certainly don't want to take away from, like, you know, the hard slog that his sponsors did. But it's, you know what it is in the end? And it's me being slightly cynical, but there's a sense of, like, you know what? If you want to make reference to something heartfelt, just do it. Just don't sully it with these, like, you know, I appreciate that your relationship with your sponsors are important because they pay you money and that's fine. But, like, Jesus Christ, you know.
Send a, like, second tweet.
Yeah, there should be a second tweet. In fairness, I was aware of the tweet because one of the first things Nathan Murphy mentioned on his return to the office was, did you see the Justin Rose tweet? I just wanted you to explain the situation.
Yeah, yeah. It does leave you a bit cold, doesn't it?
It's very hollow.
It feels in one way at odds with Justin Rose as a personality.
Mm. Yeah,
but he's
for
become
sure.
such a Like, we're slagging him about it every second week. He's become such a corporate monster. And maybe it's not Justin Rose. Maybe it's his social media manager or his management team need to realize that you could reflect Justin Rose as, I don't know, this brilliant family man, competitor, touch on the, like his story is the ultimate. All right, he's upper class white guy. It probably won't be turned into a movie, but he missed 21 cuts in a row when he turned professional. This is the ultimate underdog story. Like, it's rags to riches.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
But because his sponsors are the most corporate there are going, it just, it's a little bit hollow.
Yeah, I think so.
There's also, I mean, what was said about Rose at the time, after he had missed these 21 cuts and all of a sudden the hot attention that was put upon him after he finished second at the Open and turned pro and everybody was like, he's the next big thing. And slowly but surely, all the attention kind of fell away, that it led Rose to reassess the value of his, I'm using friendships with air quotes, but of the friendships that he had, or these newly acquired friendships, that all of a sudden, you know, these people, they were like hail fellow well met when things were going well, but when things weren't going well, that they didn't have a lot of time for him. So one of the things that I'd heard, and this is going back a good few years now, is that Rose became very cynical about the wider golf community and was like, you know what, I know now who my friends are and I know now who they aren't. And I don't know, maybe that has colored his view of things since. So he realizes, you know what, I'm a businessman here and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
We should mention that, listen, he deserves to be world number one. He's won four times in the last year.
He's brilliant.
He's finished top 10, 19 of the last 26 tournaments.
Yeah, he's a great presence on a golf course when you're there in person, actually.
Yeah.
He's a real swagger. Sure. He's a big man, you know, he's well over 6 foot and he has a star quality. He does have star quality, yeah, that maybe it does dim slightly through the prism of television for some reason, but when he's there and he's on a course, I mean, your eyes are on him. He's a big deal.
What I was going to say, so he deserves the position of world number one. it's hard to think of too many players who've got to that position in a more underwhelming manner.
Hmm. Yeah, I suppose.
Bogeyed 18, bogeyed yeah. in the playoff.
Yeah.
And it just felt really
yeah.
flat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, I realised to kind of to bookend this yes. thing about yeah, Rose, I'm going to read out the tweet because just to do. So we did it, Dad. No, just to be fair to him. World number one, thank you so much to my family, friends, and everybody that has helped me achieve this incredible goal. Also my sponsor. So you know what? Now that looking at it now, he does. He includes his caddy in this. So, yeah.
Davenport anyway. Rose back.
Oof. Wow.
Oof. You know what it is?
News cycles are getting faster and faster. Usually there'd be like a 24-hour backlash, and then on day three you'd have to row back. You haven't even stood by your position for 10 minutes here.
But I would still agree with Nathan. Like a second tweet, just stick the sponsor.
You drag Nathan into it now.
You're on your own here, pal. I have no problem. I was saying to Joe when I came into the office, we need to be a bit more corporate, Joe. We need to thank our sponsors in every single tweet from now on.
Oh, listen. When he said, "Did you see Justin Rose's tweet?" He said, "I thought it was beautiful."
Yeah. Those guys are Rolex.
Yeah,
I love them.
Yeah. It's not Rolex.
There is a link.
Hublot.
Yeah, it's a Hublot. Is that a step up from Rolex?
And the rest, yeah. Hublot is one of those, like, they're very expensive.
Ryder Cup.
Yes.
Phil, what?
What do you mean, if you're stuck at home?
Sorry. No. You're going to talk about the American picks first. I was going to, was like, the European one choices. Name particularly.
Okay, well, Phil, Tiger, Finau, DeChambeau. That was, and always seemed to be pretty straightforward, despite, as Nathan says, maybe a few murmurings about Keegan Bradley's late form. Yeah. That was less of an issue. Meanwhile, Sergio Stenson, Casey and Poulter has provoked some raised eyebrows from various quarters. For instance, Oliver Brown.
I read it.
In the Telegraph. If Ryder Cup captaincy is to mean anything, it should involve the forensic dissection of candidates' credentials and a sense that unexpected late surges, such as that of Matt Wallace, the Englishman who won 4 titles in the past 15 months, are properly taken into account. With Bjorn's selections, there is no evidence that any of this has happened. All the signs, indeed, are that he simply wants to bring the old gang back together. And then he says, the notion of Garcia as some master motivator, the natural heir to Seve, is in itself a moot point. After Europe's defeat at Valhalla, for instance, Nick Faldo described his performance as useless, bad attitude, half a point. And then he goes on to reference Minnesota 2016. The relationship between Darren Clark and Lee Westwood was a telling example of how cozy a cabal a Ryder Cup team could be. So that's Oliver Brown, who doesn't think much of the picks. I presume, is Sergio the big one that people are unhappy with?
I think Casey.
Okay, go on.
Well, he's won once this year.
Yeah.
Bjorn's logic is that 5 of the 8 automatics are rookies. So he went for experience. And that's how he's saying it. But Casey hasn't played a Ryder Cup for 10 years. Now, most of it by his own choice, where he's took it. There is one question mark. Did Bjorn feel obliged because all of a sudden Casey announced this year, well, I want to be considered for selection. Didn't make it automatically. And so he's picked him based on experience. Now, Casey mightn't have had the huge amount of experience at Ryder Cups, but obviously he's a very experienced tour player. But I still think Casey over Thomas Peters, that's mental. Like, Thomas Peters should have been in there all day long and twice on Sunday.
I don't know about that. I think Paul Casey has shown more form this year than Thomas Peters had. Peters hasn't done a huge amount on the last couple of months. I would have loved to have seen Peters there because everything you hear about him is he is the type of personality that the more pressure, the better he plays, that he actually needs a weight of expectation on his shoulders, but he hasn't done anywhere near enough. He was nowhere near qualifying automatically. Casey, it seems there was quite a bit of politics behind it. James Corrigan was writing about this even before the selection, that Casey was definitely going to be in, that it wasn't this simple case of Casey picking up the phone and going, do you know what, I've missed the Ryder Cup, I want back in. It was the European Tour chased hard all the way to the top with Keith Pelly going to Casey saying, what do we need to do for you to be a part of this team? It would have been very difficult for them to go back and then...
But why is it so important to have Casey in the team?
I suppose maybe when the process started to get him on the team, he was...
And I think, like, he's still...
a phenomenal player at the time.
There's a bigger issue here for the European Tour, and they've had to cede some ground in the fight to get players to play however many tournaments.
Casey's still playing in
the PGA Tour.
He's on the PGA Tour. He's still inside the world top 20. Mm. So he's ahead of Henrik Stenson, Tyrrell Hatton, Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter and Thorbjørn Olsen. You know, he's still kind of right up there as a player, like 19th in the world.
But he trailed both Peters and Cabrera Bello in the European points by a considerable amount. So now I realize it's because he plays in the, on the PGA Tour, but doesn't it make Cabrera Bello and Peters feel justifiably annoyed that they were overlooked?
Peters had a much
hotter end of season.
He did for the last few weeks. And Cabrera Bello for the last couple of months has been unbelievably consistent. And maybe if he'd won one of those tournaments, would have forced his way in. Like, Sergio seemed to be the one that there was a question mark over. I have some sympathy for Bjorn. I'm not his biggest fan. It's not a European team that you really feel you're coming together behind. But there are five rookies. He did need to find some experience. And the problem is, and like having the final tournament they made in Denmark, you can understand why Thomas Bjorn's the captain. It fitted in nicely in the calendar. Is that there's also a huge tournament taking place in America the same week. Like, Matt Wallace has won four times. What's he won?
Yeah.
Like, I would put Paul Casey's one win ahead of Matt Wallace's four wins. And that Matt Wallace is annoyed and frustrated as well. But this is probably a stepping stone for him. And what Matt Wallace will look to do next is what Tommy Fleetwood has done over the last couple of years and end up playing some sort of a world tour. I think his hands were tied a little bit. And I do agree that, like, Sergio, this thing of he's the natural heir to Seve is sort of...
He'd be like a football team without a captain.
It's such lazy analysis as well. It's like he's Spanish, Seve. It's like, it's just mental. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Peters is the one though, because there's a bit of fire in him that you would like. But now, if it's tight on the final day, who do you want? Mm. Do you want Cabrera Bello or do you want Sergio? I still think you want Sergio. Like, he's won a major since the last Ryder Cup.
I know, it's just starting to feel like a long time ago.
Mm. But he's had a horrendous time of it since.
He has. I mean, it's been a strange collapse in form because he has still thrown in very good rounds.
And he played brilliantly at the French Open, at Le Golf National. He finished eighth.
Absolutely. It is a ball striker's course, by all accounts. Peter's talked to us about it. This isn't going to suit Phil Mickelson and Tiger off the tee. Well, Tiger, if he drives it like he just did, will be phenomenal. But, you know, you've got to find your fairways. And if there's one club that Sergio's generally pretty damn good with, it is a driver.
Yeah.
And one thing on the wildcards, people have been obviously trying to research the impact of the wildcards. Since 2010, six of the 26 wildcards have picked up more than 2 points. So now I notice part of that is that they don't play quite as much if they're younger players. Those players are Tiger, Luke Donald, Dustin Johnson, Ian Poulter, Stuart Sink, and Thomas Peters. Okay. So Peters has been the exception. Most of them are vastly experienced players who are going to get out and play three or four times. I just wonder, Thomas Bjorn might have been looking at thinking, I'll put Sergio out Friday morning in the four balls. Mm. And listen, if he stinks the joint out, I can drop him.
I can take him out. I can drop
him. But if something just clicks inside him, what an asset he's going to be.
Yeah, it's true.
That logic makes perfect sense.
I'm looking forward to seeing how John Ram gets caught into it. John Ram goes as of the Spanish contingent. Sorry, Darren Clark.
Surely John Ram is a natural heir to Seve because, you know, Spanish, therefore Seve. Mm.
Yeah.
Makes sense. It was Darren Clark that picked Peters, wasn't it, as the wild card? Mm. After having played with him and said, this is the future number one.
Mm. Yeah, true. Which compensates somewhat for his Lee Westwood pick, in fairness. Like, he got the Peters one right, and it was a tougher call in some ways to make.
Yeah, for sure. Though,
and to be fair on Westwood, right, none of us pre-tournament, pre-Ryder Cup 2 years ago, were saying it was an outrageous pick. Westwood at that stage was still a fairly obvious and safe pick, given his record and where he was form-wise. So it was only when he completely collapsed that it became a fairly horrible pick. But at the time, I never heard many people in advance saying, what's he doing picking Westwood?
Just to confirm, Peter Lawrie was meant to be here today, but is still hanging his head in shame in claiming that Thomas Bjorn was going to select.
True, although, I mean, as someone tweeted in earlier on, they said, when's Peter coming in and do his victory lap over Jordan Spieth's failure to make the Tour Championship? So, Jordan Spieth, I mean, Jordan.
He's facing a fine. He hasn't played enough tournaments
20
this year.
Grand, yeah. He needed to qualify for Eastlake.
He's going to be okay.
Play Eastlake he'll be fine. But, like, it's such a weird thing to happen.
I tell you what is good that's happened, Fiona, as we begin to wrap this up, is that no longer when you've got a 45 putt, am I going to have to hold the flag?
45 foot putt.
It's hard to say.
Oh, yeah.
When you've got a 45 footer, I'm not going to have to stand and hold the bloody flag for you anymore.
No, that's true. Come here.
Hey, do you know what I always found, actually? when you were holding the flag for someone
because they're far away. So I'm delighted this rule change is coming in. But you know when they hit an absolute shocker of a putt?
Yeah.
Do you take the flag out for them and pretend, or do you just leave it in all the way and there's an embarrassment of going, I didn't even actually get the flag?
I think there's a passive-aggressive way of just leaving the flag in as if, like, seriously, you thought that was going to hurt the hole. What
but so, I feel it's equally passive-aggressive when it's 15 feet wide to take out the flag and look at them.
Good point. Either way.
Either way, it's not good for anyone.
I realise that we don't have a huge amount of time left. But
the poll.
And before I do, did you see that the first gay golfer, or the first golfer to come out as gay, did you see that?
Yeah.
Tad Fujikawa ranked 2046th in the world. Mm-hmm. 2042nd,
was he
sorry.
World number one amateur? Was he not an exceptional player when he was younger? Did he not play maybe qualified, PGA Tour when he was 15 or something?
He became the youngest player to qualify for the US Open as a 15-year-old in 2006.
Okay.
And that is literally all I know about this.
Well, game. I'm sure he's going to get a very warm welcome from the right-wing PGA Tour.
And that's a perfect segue, Nathan, because Golf.com did an anonymous poll of players.
Can I just say, I love these anonymous polls.
These are brilliant.
I just think, why are they not in the Premier League? Yeah. Why are they not in all sports?
Why don't we do them around the office?
They are just, I'd prefer
So they did. So just
they are just amazing. So
59 players participated. The surveying was done at the PGA Championship and the Wyndham this year. And of the 59 players, four major winners, one 2018 major winner, so it was either Koepka, Molinari or Reed, and three of the top 20 players in the world. So 59 players, three top 20s. So it's a fairly good spread, including some major winners. Okay, so I'll give you the top line is that, you know, they started off with the softball stuff. It's like, how do you feel about the PGA Championship moving to May? Any surprise that 76% said absolutely happy about it?
And also the personal stuff, Fionn.
Okay, so who will win more majors, Jordan Spieth or Justin Thomas? 68% said...
Well... 68%.
Justin Thomas.
Yes. And 29% said Jordan.
Well, Peter Laurie somewhere just suddenly got a nice warm feeling through his body and isn't sure why.
Wait,
yeah.
68% Justin Thomas and 29% said Jordan Spieth.
Yeah. And 3% were undecided, in case you were doing maths there.
What kind of wet blanket would just wouldn't give a... It's a guess. It's not like we're going to hold you to it. I'm undecided.
Exactly. In these days of GDPR, people finding out all your personal information, you would worry that someday you'll wake up and go...
Fair enough.
Okay, so here's... And kind of more... Does having a slow playing partner ever hurt your on-course performance? 78%.
78%, yes. Yeah. Everyone wants excuses. I'm sure it does to a point.
And then there was a series of kind of hot take quotes, and one of them, a bunch of millionaires aren't going to speed up by fining them 10K. So that's the general view of golf, is like, you're fined, you can, who cares? Have you ever witnessed a fellow tour player cheat during a tournament round?
Oh, let us guess a percentage.
Go on.
Oh, 79% yes.
I'm going to say 28% yes.
Split the difference, 44% said yes. And the quotes are, multiple times, the tour is a joke when it comes to enforcing the rules. And another quote, I've seen guys bend the rules and mark their ball improperly. So it says that cheating, perhaps endemic, is maybe a little strong, but commonplace.
Okay.
Would we be fair to say that it's commonplace?
It's fair to know. Like, one man's cheating is another man's ad. That's not, like, some players there who said yes may only have seen backstopping and said that is cheating. And others may have said, ah, that's not really cheating. You know, like, so there is a tiny amount of interpretation at play there. Tiny amount, I appreciate. But someone may have said yes because it's backstopping and that's all they may have seen. Any other ones?
And that any unruly fan behaviour ever cost you a shot? 53% said yes. And one of the quotes was, every single week, with each word punctuated by a full stop. And then we get into the stuff, okay? So, did you vote for Trump? No surprise, 56%. Said yes.
That is a surprise.
Which actually surprised me that it was that low.
The other 44 didn't vote.
Yeah.
This is the one that shocks me. If he runs again in 2020, will you vote for him? 42% said yes.
Mm.
Like,
they ain't budging. He's doing a fine job, Fionn.
He's doing an amazing job. He's not lying. He's not You know, where's the collusion?
PGA Tour player.
Where's the collusion?
Yeah, the economy's booming. That counts for something.
The economy's booming. Stocks are up. Well, I mean, but here's the thing, and that's another thing. It's like someone said, he's made me some money. That's all I care about. Like, Obama made the billionaires richer. Trump makes, like, millionaires get richer regardless of who's in the White House. Yeah. Doesn't make a blind bit of difference. You're in that special 1% of the world where you're making money no matter what's going on.
I don't know if you know, there's a saying actually that the rich get richer.
Here's one.
Is there anything about Patrick Reed?
Is this not a who would you not hop in for in the car park kind of survey, no?
No, there was like some... Do you respect Brandel Chamblee's opinions? 64% is yes.
Ooh.
And then the standard ones. Will Tiger win another event? Yeah. 98% say yes.
Ooh.
Another major, 90% said yes.
Wow.
Tiger versus Phil money match. Who's your money on? 76% on Tiger. But then it's the quotes that I like is that like, who cares? Maybe I would have 15 years ago.
That's pretty funny. Anything Rory related, no?
Should Phil have been DQ'd at Shinnecock? 44% said yes. And then here's the thing. Okay, so who has the most natural talent? I'll let you guess the player. That one's considerably, like, well ahead on 40%.
Dustin Johnson.
Well done.
Good guess.
So Dustin Johnson. But then the list
educated
here.
Guess, sorry. Yeah,
Bubba
sorry.
Watson.
Yeah, Bubba Watson.
Bubba Watson, 14%.
I can see that.
Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, and then Anthony Kim.
Wow. The one that got away.
Yeah. Who is the best pure ball striker on tour? Now, the percentages, it's split across a lot of players. So the winner here only got 14%.
Okay.
And maybe the sample size of 59 players comes into play here as being considerably small.
Adam Scott.
Nathan, have a guess.
I didn't hear the question.
Who's the best ball striker?
Oh, who is
the pure
best
ball striker?
Whew. That's a great question. I don't know why I was going to say Jason Day when it's such a ridiculous answer.
It really is. Neither of your guesses are even in the top seven.
All right, Fionn. I don't get to play with them every week, okay?
Best striker.
I realize the listeners are on... bated breath here.
I am curious to know.
Okay, so with 14% of the vote, Henrik Stenson.
Oh, wow. That good.
Yes. And the quote is, even when Henrik Stenson shanks it, it's flush, which I liked. But also, and then the list is Tiger, Sergio, Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose, Boo Weekly, Rory McIlroy comes in, but kind of towards the end, and Justin Thomas.
In fairness, Rory throws in some wild misses sometimes. Maybe that's part of it.
No, but I mean, as a pure ball striker, like you can hit bad shots, but like, you know, just puring it. But anyway, so there you go. That's your anonymous poll for this year. Maybe not this. It's not the outrageous one from a couple of years ago of who's the least popular player on tour, Patrick Reed.
Yeah.
You know, who would you least get into a fight to defend
Bubba
Patrick
Watson.
Reed?
It was Bubba Watson, I think.
Oh, Bubba Watson. Yeah. Sorry.
Mostly because
Bubba Watson most likely have started the fight. But anyway.
Probably. We're pretty much out of time because Nathan has to run and do an interview. So, well, I guess we're into Ryder Cup territory very soon. And we'll talk to you in the next couple of weeks. Cheers, Fionn.
See you guys.
All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket now. Little JD starter kit right here.